Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And
that's
why I taught myself how to draw was actually The Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, the road to creativity. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for joining us. If you have been a listener of this show for a while, you'll know that one of my favorite forms of creativity that I really love to get into is stand-up comedy. I have been a fan of this art form since childhood. It's always been an art form that I've really gravitated towards and really love to get into and recite so many different other people's bits and chat about them with friends. Always had nothing but respect for that art form. And it's always great to hear when people make that pivot and try it out for themselves. This is something that I myself never felt like I could do. I always felt like I can never put together something like that and get up there on the stage where all it is just you, a brick facade, a microphone, and your ideas that you have crafted for so long with the express intention of making other people laugh. And comedy being as subjective as it is, everyone laughs at different things. And so it's something that I never really felt like I had the guts to try, especially now that 50 is around the corner for me. But that is not the case with my guest this week. Michael Dennis has decided, after years of being a pastor and still being a pastor to this day in Texas, he has made the pivot and has gotten on stage and tried this form for himself. And the fact that he is doing it, the fact that he is getting up there, the fact that he is going through different gigs and really finding himself as a comic is something to not only be respected, but to be celebrated, because we need more of comics out there in the world. We need more people that have the guts to stand on those stages and try things out in front of people and see what happens. I am really excited to talk about Michael's journey into stand-up comedy, and I hope you're as excited as I am to listen to it. So it is my pleasure to introduce my guest this week, Mr. Michael Dennis. Michael, how are you, sir?
Oh, I mean, after that introduction, I'm inspired. I want to get back on a stage.
There you go. There you go. It's something that I have loved for so many years. Yeah. And I remember when I was 11 years old in sixth grade, we were doing a lip sync contest amongst our sixth grade class. And I decided I was going to do a Bill Cosby bit while everyone else is doing songs on Blowing the Room Away. It was a really, really funny bit. And it was one of those great moments that just kind of put the exclamation point on that time, because it was right before I made the move to Richmond, Virginia, and my confidence just took a nosedive. But it was a great way to go out on, I would say. So I attribute stand-up comedy to a lot of really good things in my life. So the fact that you're up there doing it, you're trying it out and everything, I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
And you just recently finished up some gigs, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. Maybe a year and a half, I kind of did an open mic on kind of a dare to myself, really intending only to do it one time, bucket list, check it off. And really, I mean, just got hooked. And so the last year and a half, just been kind of dabbling and hustling and trying. And just in the last couple of days, been able to be a part of a couple of shows here in Austin, Texas. It feels like one of those snowballs that's got a life of its own. And I don't know how long it'll last. Honestly, it could end tomorrow, but as of right now, I'm just kind of saying yes to every opportunity.
That's terrific. A lot of times, that's what you got to do. You throw caution to the wind, you get up there, you see what happens, and if it winds up working out, fantastic. So that's terrific. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that you're following in the footsteps of a very interesting legend in stand-up comedy, someone who started out in the world of ministering and then made that pivot into stand-up comedy. It's a different type of story that you're on right now, but like, I'd be remiss if I would not mention the legend that is Sam Kinison.
Sam Kinison, that's right. I wasn't sure. I was like, where is he going? That's where he's going. Okay. I want to say he might have been a pastor in Texas also, like if I remember.
I think you're right.
I have to double check that.
He was definitely in the South, did that. Yeah, I think he was a Baptist minister, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, maybe. He was a character.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And so was he on your mind when you decided to make that pivot?
No, I pastor a church. It's a small church here in Austin, Texas. And in a 30-minute sermon, I might get two chuckles. And it's fun to have somebody laugh in a sermon, but it's also somewhat easy because they're not expecting to laugh. And right. So I just, over the years, I thought, well, I wonder if I could just make strangers laugh and do it in 10 seconds. And it's raised kids for 20 years and now they're out of the house doing their thing. And I thought, well, I'm going to give it a try. And it is terrifying. You step on a stage and people are essentially saying, make me laugh. And, and it's just silence. And what you think is so funny with your friends, you can't always convert that to strangers. And
yeah,
so I got done and it was a blur. And I asked my wife, like, how did that go? And she was so sweet. She's like, you need to be funnier. And I was like, well,
good to have that honesty.
Yeah, she was honest. And honestly, I didn't plan on doing it again. But by the time I got to my car that night, I was like, I think I can do better. And
yeah,
kept trying it. And it really didn't kind of hook for me until I actually talk about being a pastor. And for most people, they don't interact with a pastor. And so it is like in the first sentence, I tell people I'm a pastor. And so it creates tension in the room, like right away, because everybody's wondering like, oh my gosh, what's he going to say? What's he going to do? And I've kind of just been leaning into that. And it's been a lot of fun.
That's great. That is so cool. It's very much along the lines of kind of like the right way.
Yeah, that's right. And people told me you should talk about being a pastor. And I thought, like, I don't want to make fun of the church. I don't want to make fun of my faith. I don't want to make fun of the audience. So how do you do that? And I've stumbled into just a couple of different bits here and there. And so far, people have made it a lot of fun.
That sounds along the lines of what the Monty Python group were coming up with when they were working on Life of Brian. Because originally they had some ideas of doing some very, very controversial humor about attacking the different faiths and everything. But then they did the research and they read up on everything and the Bible and the Dead Sea Scrolls and everything and just really dug deep into it. And they realized like they couldn't really do that. So when it came to Christ himself, they only put him in two spots, his birth, which is kept very sacred because all the really funny parts are took place in the manger that was right next to him, yeah. where Brian was born. And then people that are listening to the Sermon on the Mount but they're like way, 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 way in the back and they can't hear him.
Yeah.
So it became this wonderful, wonderful tale about different people who can't seem to agree with each other. And yeah, that became where the humor was. And so it's like they figured out where to find the humor, but still not denigrate the different religions and
creating
something really magical. I think
I need to watch that again. That's a good reminder.
It's definitely worth it. I mean, everyone always points to Monty Python and the Holy Grail, but for me, like Life of Brian is just a little bit better. It's a little bit more cinematic and has that real, feels like it's telling us something really.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's that to me was just like truly magical. One of the greatest comedies of all time. But let's stick with you here because I'm really interested in hearing where all of this really came from. Because if you're going to get up on stage to try stand-up comedy, you can't really do it without a love for the art itself. It's hard to just kind of say, like, just get up there on a whim and just suddenly do it. But you said it was on a bucket list. So what was it about stand-up that really grabbed your attention? What were the ones that really got you into it?
Yeah, I make a joke about, as being a pastor, like, this guy's not on a stage enough already. He's got to come and do comedy. And I do love words. I studied rhetoric in college, and so I love the crafting of words. So obviously, preaching dips into that. But comedy is a completely different formatting of those words. And so I grew up watching Eddie Murphy, and my mom took me to see Eddie Murphy raw at the movie theater when I was 11. And I mean, he's a genius. And so I always thought of comedians are on another sphere. That's something only really amazing people can do. And really in just the last 10 years, 5 years, you've seen guys like Jim Gaffigan. They're obviously incredibly talented and gifted also, but they're just talking about life and they're crafting stories and words and timing and tone. And so I just thought, well, I could maybe do that. And so that's what kind of started the idea. And honestly, I'm still learning what's funny to a certain audience. And there's some of the comics I've met here in Austin. They're reading the room as soon as they walk in, and then they're crafting their set based on who they see in the room. And I say to them, I'm like, I have 10 minutes and I'm doing those 10 minutes no matter who's in the room. I'm not to a place where I'm crafting, but I would love to get to that place where you can really put together a set based on who's there.
Oh, nice. So just doing like a lot of crowd work kind of thing?
Well, they'll do crowd work, but even the content of their jokes, they have like basically a catalog. Some of these guys have been doing it 8, 10, 12 years, and they're not on Netflix, but they're touring around the nation and they're making a living out of it. And they just have so many things to draw on. And so they just look completely comfortable. And where I'm at a phase where I'm just happy if I can remember my set. That's my goal. Can I do what I planned to do? Because I still get nervous just standing in front of people.
Even as a pastor?
Yes, I definitely feel more comfortable, but there's always a bit of nerves. I would not say I'm a natural communicator. I'm really into the process. But with sermons and with jokes, I write, I manuscript, I memorize, and I plan and I practice. When it goes according to my plan, I can do okay. But I'm not impromptu at all.
Are there times when you kind of just realize as you're doing it, hey, this has a spot for a little joke here? Do you go ahead and just wing it or do you stick to your script?
I would say 90% is script. And then maybe I go back and listen and watch everything I do. Every once in a while, I'll pull out something off the cuff and that can be useful. But most of the time, it's best for me to stay to my plan.
Yeah. And do you, while you're working on your stand-up, find that you're able to kind of take something that you said at the pulpit and realize like, oh, that got a joke, and then try to tweak it into your stand-up?
I have tried once or twice, and I haven't figured that out yet. It seems to come across more as like I'm preaching, even though I'm trying to talk about something funny. Yeah. I don't know if it's my tone or my delivery, and if maybe on Sunday people are just being nice and they laughed and it wasn't that funny, or because it does feel like a completely different formatting of words. And so I've not yet kind of mixed those words. I keep them pretty separate.
Speaking of which, do you feel that you have been able to kind of keep your audiences separate? Do you mention at all, like while you're at church, that you're doing stand up at this particular place?
In the beginning, I didn't tell anybody because I wasn't sure how long I'm going to be doing this. And then as I started to really enjoy it, I basically started leaking it out to other people in our church of like, what do you think about me doing this? Can I do both? Yeah. Or is there a block in people's brain? And fairly quickly, our church family's really embraced it and they're supportive and they think it's just... Somebody in my church said, "Why, you're not even that funny. Why are you doing this?"
always good to get that kind of support.
Right. And it's just, so for them, I think they think it's a bit of a novelty. And so our church has done like clean comedy showcases at our church we'll use it to raise money for a charity in Austin. And they've really latched on to that. And they'll come to a couple of shows. Most of the shows in Austin are not clean. Most of the comics are, I mean, dabbling in some pretty rough content. And so, it's not been blending the audiences too much.
When you have those sort of events where you have the clean comedy over at the church, are you the MC of those events?
Yeah, that's how I'll do it. I'll get up and do maybe 8-10 minutes of like a host to set up the night. And then I'm looking constantly for comics here in Austin that can do 10 to 40 minutes of clean comedy. And I think Nashville probably has a lot of clean comics, but Austin right now, there's not very many.
Yeah. So tell us about that moment that, like, when I think about it, I immediately start to feel shaky and sweaty and everything. Just even thinking about the concept of just getting up on that stage for the very first time, grabbing the microphone and just starting your bit. What was it like when you finally did it? You finally got on stage. You said it was a bucket list item. So here it is. Yeah. You're scratching that item off. You're actually doing it. There you are. You got the mic in hand. You're on the stage. And what happened?
Yes. I mean, just intense adrenaline is going through your body. And so I'm doing everything I can to not shake with just adrenaline. And so there's another comic taught me this breathing technique where you inhale for 4 seconds, you hold it for 4 seconds, and then you exhale for 4 seconds. He said he got it from a SEAL team. I don't know, but I'm doing anything to calm my heart rate. I got done and I had no idea what I said. I'm a year and a half later. I can feel my brain slowing down. I can see myself making eye contact with people. I know what I think should be funny and just my heart rate is calming down. But I still see guys do it that just look smooth. And that's really what I want to get to.
Yeah. And then so you have that moment, you get through the gig and everything, you get done. Your wife tells you, like, you should be funnier.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you started to already think about different ways you can improve yourself. So when you had that second chance, what was that like?
Oh, it went worse.
Really?
Yes, it went worse. And I think that may have been the time that I was leaning on some things in sermons that have been funny and that I thought could cross over, like shopping at Whole Foods or putting your dog in a stroller. And it just, in the moment, it felt like I was getting onto them, maybe. Like, it didn't feel funny. And then the third time is when I tried talking about being a pastor. And as soon as I got done, I actually had people laugh, which I don't know that I had people laugh until that third time. And as soon as I got done, another comic came up to me and they said, as soon as you said you were a pastor, I leaned in and I wanted to listen. Really? And I just thought, oh, there's something there.
It's almost like you have a chance to kind of pull back the curtain a little bit.
That's how I look at it. And people's experience with pastors is probably mostly shaped by what they see on TV. And they're usually not positive experiences.
Well, yeah.
And so if I can give hopefully a positive experience, it creates, in some ways, I feel like I'm almost cheating compared to the guy who just has to stand up and say, hey, a little bit about myself. I play tennis. Like, I have an immediate hook. And so I've kind of just been taking advantage of that.
That's terrific. That's a great way to look at it as well. So during the time that you were just kind of getting started, were they all around the same area geographically in terms of where you live, where the church is, where the clubs are? Are they all kind of close together or were you actually traveling outside of the circle in order to get to the stand-up clubs?
I mean, around 2020, Joe Rogan moved to Austin. And so comedy just exploded. And so almost any night you can find a show or multiple open mics. There's probably 1500 men and women in Austin that weren't here 5 years ago pursuing comedy. I live almost across the street from one of our historic comedy clubs here in Austin called Cap City. And they did an open mic and that's where I got started. And it's in my neighborhood. And that was a huge help.
And I do have to say, since you said that Rogan moved over there, I got to say that despite what a lot of other people will say about his show and his different leanings and his beliefs and everything, one thing that you cannot deny is the man is a true student of stand-up comedy. And I will say, like, you can obviously agree or disagree with how much the man kills on his different specials. But when he sits down and talks about the art of stand-up comedy, you just want to just like sit down and just take it all in. Have you heard some of the stuff that he's been saying that he said about stand-up on the radio?
Oh, I mean, yes, constantly. And he really has almost like in the church, one of our values is to disciple people in their faith and help them kind of learn what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Yeah. And he's absolutely doing that with comedians. And he is looking for younger, less experienced men and women, and he takes them under their wing and launches them. And it's really impressive to watch. And so anything he's talking about, I'm wanting to learn from. And that's true of any comic right now. I feel like any show I can go to, I'm just constant learning.
Yeah, it seems like his main arc is just to make sure that you are you unapologetically. Mm-hmm. And so with that, do you feel like as you've been doing this more and more, have you felt yourself getting more and more comfortable, more and more enthusiastic about the art itself? What are your thoughts about it now after doing it for as long as you have?
Well, that's a great question, because when I first started talking about being a pastor, I really thought there's no way they're going to want me in this room. Like clubs would not book me or have me and blacklist me, and other comedians would ostracize me of like, because the comedy world is almost where you kind of go to get away from the church, you know, and kind of make fun of authority and power and those types of things. And so I really did not think that it would be a welcoming environment. And it honestly has been the exact opposite. I mean, people have been so friendly, so encouraging, so supportive, and they don't necessarily line up with my beliefs or agree with what I teach on a Sunday morning, but they love comedy and they love people trying to pursue comedy and they love if somebody's funny. And so it feels like all those walls have come down. So when I first started, I was always nervous, like I'm going to get yelled at. And now I really am less concerned and just feeling much more comfortable with like, yeah, I'm a pastor. It's not a big deal. And they're building a trust with me. And so am I with them.
During this time that you've been doing this, have you come across the same comics from different shows? Do you wind up meeting different comics at different locations? Do you find yourself kind of gravitating more towards certain comics so that way you can kind of all gel as one show? Do you feel like that there's potential for that in the future?
Oh, yeah. There's definitely a brotherhood, a sisterhood, kind of how you were speaking about comedy. I mean, if anybody who gets up on a stage to try to make somebody laugh, there's immediate respect, you know, for just trying. And then you're kind of slowly drifting into a style of comedy, and then you're naturally kind of connecting. And so clean comedy is probably the ones that I'm connecting with the most. And it all comes down to like, if you can make people laugh, people are interested in wanting to brainstorm with you about comedy.
Any potential for some of those comics and you kind of getting together to create a group that would be touring together?
That's interesting. There's just a couple of guys that literally in the last 48 hours, we've been brainstorming two different options. One is the clean comedy for a cause. We could do that really in anywhere in the world, in the nation, in charity, and all the proceeds go to a charity. So we just did one a month ago and gave them $3,500.
What was that show like?
It's for a local organization called Foster Village, and they help with fostering and adoption. And we had 150 plus people there. And see, there was three comics and I was hosting, and and we charged $25 a ticket, and we did some Facebook ads. It was our second time to do something like that. That went really well. And so we're brainstorming like you could really do this in anywhere. And then just last night I was doing the guy called it comedy in the courtyard of an apartment complex. The apartment complex wants to do a community event once a month. And so he's like, well, we could do a comedy show. And so they actually gave us money, which you don't make a lot of money doing comedy. And so they actually gave us a little bit of money to host a show. And so we all walked away like, oh, we could do this anywhere in the nation also. And it's plug and play, turnkey. It was really, because if you think about like a touring band, they're coming with roadies and musicians, and where with comic, it's just a mic. And yeah, it's pretty simple. And so those are two ideas that I think maybe you don't have to be a nationally known name, and you could maybe do something fun outside of Austin.
Excellent. Have you thought about maybe kind of reaching out to a more well-known comic and kind of have them be the lead act and then the headliner, and then have other guys like kind of be the warm-ups for them?
Yeah. So I've reached out to some of the bigger names early on. I did that maybe a few years ago and realized they're not going to talk to me. And then the people that were right under them, they would talk to me, but they were expensive. And even if we wanted to bring them in and try to build a relationship with them, what I found is if you go maybe two more tiers down, those guys are still touring around the nation. And so I've been slowly messaging them, sending them like 10, 15 minutes of like, hey, I work really cheap if you're in the area. So that's really just starting though.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That sounds great. And it sounds like this is a really good time where everything is just kind of starting up. Everything feels fresh and new and different ideas that are on the horizon. And have you been doing with marketing? your stuff. You mentioned the Facebook ads, but have you been able to get some videos done of yourself doing stand-up? Have you been able to get yourself out there a little bit more in the world of social media?
I have an Instagram account and a TikTok account. I just got on TikTok like a month ago. And so that's I'll take 10-second, 15-second clips and put them on. And at first I thought, well, I don't want to put my jokes on my pages. Then people will come to the shows that already know the jokes. And then I realized like nobody's coming to these pages. And so that's not a concern right now.
Right.
And then second, I just thought, no, that really forces me to, I really don't want to rely on jokes in the past. I want to constantly be thinking about how to write new material. And for me, if I can get into a rhythm of writing new content, then I think like, oh, I could do this for years. So that's really what I'm trying to wrestle with now is like, can I come up with a system, a process to create? And because I feel like as at this point, I've kind of stumbled into jokes accidentally. And so that's where I'm trying to figure out, can I do it intentionally?
Nice. And I've seen feedback from comedians about how they deal with getting their jokes like suddenly showing up on social media. Because a lot of comics that are out there, they're working on bits for a larger show. And so they're trying things out. And so if they're putting out those bits, if someone is taking like video of them just doing like, if the audience member is just over at the club and they're just taking a video of something for a headliner comic and it's not working, that particular joke may not work yet.
Right.
But it's almost like kind of taking someone's first draft of a novel and sticking it up on the internet.
Is
that kind of what it feels like with you? It feels like how, because I've seen different comics with their bits that are up on there, like different things from say like Comedy Cellar or something. And those are really good, well shot videos that that represent the comic really well. But then at the same time, you also have other people that are getting snapping videos of other people that are just kind of working on something and it's not quite there yet, but it's starting to kind of paint a picture of how that person is based on the videos that get up there. What are your thoughts on how, on that sort of dichotomy that comes with getting your jokes up there?
Yes, right now, I don't know that I have a position to be picky. And so I will get up anywhere and everywhere. And I am still learning kind of what I can do and not do because I am a pastor. And that is a concern of mine of just like, oh, maybe I crossed the line in there. I shouldn't have gone in that direction. And what if somebody records that and they post it? And so right now I'm kind of like, look, this isn't my main focus in life. If this turns out to be a flop, then I'm much more concerned about being a pastor than a comedian. So I'm holding it with an open hand. But in Austin, our better clubs, they actually take your phone and they lock it away. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because exact thing, they don't want to happen.
Nice. That's good. I'm glad to see that they're looking out for the comics like that. And so when it comes to taking this plunge, if anyone were in your situation, if they had wanted to do this, they hadn't yet figured out how to gather up the nerve to get up there on the stage, what is something that you would recommend that they do?
I would watch lesser known comedians. So go to YouTube and watch guys that have 5,000 views, 10,000 views.
Yeah.
Because if you watch the pros, they're so far ahead. It's just, it's too far of a leap to make. But if you watch a guy that's just a little further ahead or a girl, then I think that's really helpful. Obviously, swings at the bat, just do it. And finding open mics that are a supportive context. There are open mics where they're harsh and they're going to heckle you. Other comedians will heckle you and it's not a good experience. And so finding places that are supportive and generous and helpful, that's because a lot of it is just building confidence. Like I would think that's 90% of it, that you feel confident that this should be funny. Because early on you have zero confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you mentioned Instagram, you mentioned TikTok and the other forms of social media. Where can my listeners find you?
Yeah, Michael Dennis Comedy is probably the easiest one on Instagram. I think it's the same thing on TikTok and YouTube. I have a few videos of some sets on YouTube as well. And that'd probably be the easiest place right now.
Nice. And so do you have some gigs that are lined up in the near future?
I just finished a few that honestly were the first time I was being asked to be on shows. Up until really the last few weeks, it was always open mics and you're hoping they will let you up on the stage. So just in the last few weeks, I've actually was asked to do shows. The only thing I know of that's scheduled right now is in August, and Austin does Austin's Funniest Comedian. And there's like 1,000 men and women that'll go through this process. And so nothing immediate is scheduled right now.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, I wish you nothing but the best on this. And I just want you to keep going with it, because it sounds you've been able to grab a hold of something and you've discovered that you have a knack for it. So by all means, keep going with it. And this is something that I tell all of my listeners out there. By all means, when it comes to something like this, you have a bucket list item, definitely address it. If you want to get up on that stage, if you feel that you can do this, if you can get up on there without the fear of breaking down for any reason, then by all means, go for it. Grab the microphone, get up there, say something that is you, not something that is what you think other people will laugh at. Just tell them your story. They always say when it comes to writing books, movies, or television shows, all the stories have all been told. Wrong. Your story has not been told. So this is your time to tell it. So get up on the stage. Write the book, write the screenplay, get whatever you have that's in your head out there on the page or on the stage. Because just as I have said many times on this show, in these crazy times, the world needs your vision, the world needs your stories, the world needs you now more than ever. So for Michael Dennis, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to he'sgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to george@he'sgotit.com.